Welcome to the Faith Element podcast for the August 9, 2020 session, focusing on 1 Kings 19, verses 9 through 18, Tender Encounters. I'm Daniel Glaze.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm Crystal Shepherd.
And I'm Burt Montgomery.
So our fearless leader, David Cassidy, is on vacation this week. And while we miss him, it sort of feels like, you know, it's a rite of passage, but you know when, like, the parents go away for the weekend and the teenagers throw a party?
That's exactly what this is like.
That's what tonight's going to be like. So, anyway, I'll ask y'all, what are some of your favorite places, or what's your favorite place to take a vacation? Mm. You can be generic, beach, mountain, or specific, whatever you want to say.
I love going to the Smoky Mountains.
Yeah.
We did that when I was a kid, and then I've done it a couple of times as an adult with our family and with my wife. It's just it's a special place. It's a beautiful place.
I'm the worst at picking favorites. So it bounces between lazy beach vacation and going to a city where I can explore and do museums and learn a bunch of stuff and that kind of thing. So,
yeah, I typically like mountains, but my favorite place to vacation as an adult has been Kiowa Island, South Carolina.
Nice.
It's just, yeah. It's been lovely. It's one of those like really like laid back beach vacations. And my favorite tree in the world, I know I have a favorite tree, the angel oak, is close by. So I love Kiowa.
Well, it's funny. I love a good beach vacation too, but I love those beach vacations at like those small, quaint, cute villages or towns. Mm. Like growing up, we used to go to St. Simon's Island off of the coast of Georgia. There's Cape Charles, a sweet little town right near the Chesapeake Bay. That's, you know, you can't beat it.
Have you hit St. Augustine? That's a fun one for that.
No, I haven't. So I'll have to check that out.
It's a sweet little place.
Nice. Thanks. Well, Bert, I think you have the introduction tonight. If you'll get us started, we'd appreciate that.
All right. So the Kevin Cronin, the poet, the prophet, and the singer in the rock and roll band REO Speedwagon, describes his first experience in the Rocky Mountains during the winter. He says the sun was going down and the wind was coming up, and there were big old black storm clouds coming in from the west, and we knew we were in trouble, and we did what you do when you get in trouble. That is, stick together and keep each other warm and always keep riding the storm out. Now, if we were a highfalutin big-time podcast with unlimited cash and lots of connections, at this moment we'd queue up REO Speedwagon's Riding the Storm Out, but we're not. So you'll just have to Google it and listen to it at the end of the podcast. Our scripture text today is about some storms. It's from 1 Kings. It's about Elijah. Elijah the prophet had everything going for him. He had just decisively won what we might call the Super Bowl of the gods. Elijah had just whooped up on all the prophets and prophetesses, of false gods. And Elijah stood tall and proud as God's representative, as all those false gods' impotence was on full display against the power and majesty of our awesome God. It was a spectacular smackdown for everyone to witness, complete with trash talk that makes pro wrestlers look like mere kindergartners. Yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen, on that day there was absolutely no doubt in anyone's mind anywhere, cue up that Queen anthem, that Elijah and his God were the champions. All right. Now, Elijah was savoring every minute of this grand revelry when he got an important message from none other than that mean old Jezebel. And she swore that she was about to do unto Elijah what he had just done to all her favorite prophets. And if you don't know what he did to all her favorite prophets, well, it's good old-fashioned blood, gore, and guts, graphic details, slash them, slice them, wipe them out kind of stuff. And faster than you can say, what was your favorite Super Bowl of the Gods commercial tonight? Elijah's Super Bowl victory high dropped lower than a Skid Row low. They say hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. And even that sounds mild compared to the devastating storm Jezebel swore to unleash upon Elijah. Elijah ran from her coming storm and sought cover. But in seeking cover, Elijah found other storms waiting. The lightning strikes of utter despair and loneliness. The booming, deafening thunder of hopelessness. And the drenching downpours of doubt, self-pity, and self-loathing. And then the real storm came. And since Elijah was used to experiencing God in all the spectacular, he waited for God to speak to him in the winds and in the rain. And he waited for God to speak in the earthquake that shook everything, including him, to its very core. And he waited for God in the fire that would make Moses' burning bush pale in comparison. But for Elijah, this time, God was nowhere to be found in the spectacular and the grandiose. Instead, after the fire, God came to Elijah in the stillness, in the silence, and a faint, underwhelming, non-attention-getting whisper. He could have missed it. He almost did. It was so unassuming. The questions I think we can ask. What storms, like Elijah running from Jezebel's threat, what storms do we run from and seek shelter? Are there storms that have us running alone into caves? And then when we find ourselves in the caves, do we find other storms of loneliness and despair? In what ways do we try to find God and look for God? And the loud, overwhelming, unmistakable thunderclaps and the ground-shaking quakes and the all-consuming fire. And in what ways is God absent in those spectacular things in our lives? In what ways have you experienced God in the gentle whisper?
Bert, thanks for starting us out. This is such a beloved passage. And I realized as I was working on it this week that so often I have just chosen to focus on the still, small, sheer silence part of the passage. And as I was reading through it and working on it and studying it this week, I really paid a lot more attention to all of the stuff that came before that. And I went back and I looked at chapter 18 I love that you described this as the Super Bowl of the gods. That was perfect. It was such a great description. And I realized, like, what happens to Elijah in that cave is he's had this huge high. He's had this huge win, victory, you know, kind of the climax of his career. And then there's this big letdown. And I think it's easy to harp on Elijah because it's kind of like, why did you go so deep into so much despair after you'd had so much success? But I think that, like, there are times where we can have these really big experiences and then we're unprepared for the letdown at the end. And I think that that's where part of what had Elijah kind of down in the depths and low, but also he genuinely did feel alone. He felt like he was the only prophet left. He didn't think there was anybody else to help him. And he had just done this huge thing. Obviously, he was probably exhausted. I don't know. I love how you brought us through all of that. And I love being able to focus on that part of the text this week as I moved through it and kind of think about the implications of those previous events that got Elijah to where he could hear God in the stillness.
I like the way that you characterized his feelings. You talked about that despair that he felt, and I had this image of like the rising water, and you know, when you have a storm and the flash flooding and all these things, and I imagine that Elijah was overwhelmed at that point. Like Nikki was saying, like he's just come from this big win. He's come from this high, and now he's been brought so low. And I think about our human experience where that happens to us so often. And we're in a culture that likes to push aside those difficult feelings. But I think what we can learn from Elijah is like he had nowhere else to go. Mm-hmm. He had to be alone. And in that moment of like nowhere else to turn, can't even probably stand to even be alone with himself. And God comes to him in, like you said, the most unassuming way. And I think that in our culture of we're like, everything catches our attention, all the stuff that glitters, that this flashy commercial, this quick snippet of a media story. What I find is that can drown out a lot. And I think when we get silent, when we listen for God, we are changed. I think it requires of us to like be able to go into that cave, to step away. There's something to Elijah being alone. There's something to him. Mm-hmm. He's feeling all these big emotions, and he expects God to be in all this big stuff.
Yeah.
But when he gets down to this quiet moment, that is when God says, I'm here. I'm here with you.
I think that's a really good point, Crystal. Whenever I get to this part in this story, for some reason, it surprises me that God would act this way. Here we have this God of ours who does wonderful, mighty things, and then we're sort of surprised by this whispering God. I am, at least. Mm-hmm. It's more a revelation of me that I'm surprised by that, because this is not surprising behavior about God. So we're recording this in late July. We're still in, you know, coronavirus quarantine, so to speak. And so I just recorded Sunday worship this morning. And the gospel text I preached on this morning was the mustard seed, you know, where Jesus compares kingdom of God to mustard seed. And in that sermon, I started thinking aloud of all the ways that Christ himself represents that mustard seed, born to a poor woman in a nondescript, you know, place, from a nondescript place in the Middle East. Someone who lifted up the giving of a cup of cold water, you know, someone who lifted up a poor woman giving her last two mites. This is who this God is. And I don't know. I guess I'm just drawing a distinction or being confessional about the distinction, the ways that I want God to act and work in the world, and the ways God often chooses to. Mm. It's just striking to me.
Now, I love how we're talking about this. One of the things that I loved about the stillness that Elijah found himself in, and kind of, Crystal, you talked about how we live in this culture that's so flashy and there's lights and there's so much in front of us. And I think that we are particularly good at making that happen. But I think that there's always been busyness and loudness for humans that will block out. You know, we've always found ways to busy ourselves, to have the flash and the glitz and the glam. It's looked different ways through the years. What I love about it is that when all of that is stripped away and Elijah is left alone, God is there. And it's not that God wasn't there before, but I think that just like we can understand that God is always there, what we also can realize is we don't need anything to gain access to God. Like, we don't need anything. Elijah was alone in a cave, and it was in pure silence. And we can all look to find silence on our own. You know, we don't have to buy anything. We don't have to join a group. We don't have to do a particular practice. But that God was there and didn't need anything as a conduit for that connection.
It kind of makes me think of a saying I've heard, and I may have mentioned it on here before, but that prayer is talking to God and meditation is listening. Mm-hmm. And typically in meditation, what are we doing? We're quiet. We're sitting. We're trying to sit still. You know, it's this mm-hmm. moment where Elijah hears God. It's a moment where if we still ourselves, we are, I would say, better able to hear God speak.
And I think in many ways, Elijah's own window dressing is taken off. Elijah's just honest. You know, God says, why are you here? What are you doing? And he says, I'm terrified and I'm alone. And it's just, this is who I am here before you now. And I think that when we can get to those places in ourselves and kind of strip away our own, there's no masks, there's no... no window dressing, no trying to dress, you know, Instagram or make Facebook ready. It's just, God, here I am. And that when we can allow ourselves to be that transparent, I think is part of what can help us encounter and engage with God.
Well, I think it's interesting that the lectionary pairs this text from 1 Kings about Elijah and storms, or, you know, the big storm, and with Matthew. Matthew's gospel, we'd have to look it up. Matthew chapter 14 is the text that goes with this. And that's when Jesus and his disciples had just miraculously, again, pay attention, a big miraculous event, right? Like Elijah and Mount Carmel. Jesus and the disciples had just miraculously fed 5,000 men, not counting women and children, with only 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. Again, big event, undeniable success. And then Jesus sends the disciples out where they know they're in a boat on the sea, their natural habitat for many of them, right? He sends the people away, and then Jesus goes up to the hills to be alone and to pray. And then a storm comes out on the lake. And, you know, I grew up in New Orleans along Lake Pontchartrain. And when those winds start coming and making those waves, it'll scare you to death. And this storm in Galilee was so big, it scared the disciples to death. And in the storm, Jesus comes walking to them calmly, peacefully, sure-footedly, on the waves in the middle of the lake. Again, another spectacular, miraculous sight to see. So spectacular and miraculous that they're wondering, who is this? What is this? Is this a ghost? Which only adds to their intense fear. And in the midst of the storm, Jesus says, don't be afraid. Take courage. I'm here. I don't know what the connection is, but there's some things there, right? In the midst of the storms, God comes to us in ways we're not looking for God to come to us. Christ comes to us in a way we're not looking for Christ to come to us, to give us comfort and peace.
Bert, I love the connection that you make there with Jesus coming to the disciples on the water. And yes, this is a Christian teaching that we have, that God will care for us in the midst of our own storms, that we can rely on God when everything feels like it's falling apart. I think that one of the things that we can begin to learn to engage in the midst of all of that is, how do we find the stillness that Christ can bring in the midst of the storms that we face? So, we're in the midst of a big old storm right now of 2020, right? It feels like everything's kind of falling apart around the world. And I have found myself feeling harried and anxious and concerned and worried and needing to be still more in order to find peace, in order to connect with God. And so I'm curious, how do you all aim for stillness when everything feels like it's swirling around you?
So for me, stillness comes in a couple of ways these days. Different people have different opinions about this one that I'm going to mention, but for me, I find connecting to my breath, and this is a very spiritual thing for me. Mm-hmm. You know, the kind of the word for spirit is like breath or wind, you know. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's very spiritual. I actually do yoga, and that deep breathing and letting that breath out for me is a way in which I connect with that peacefulness that I feel like. And there's this word called the Ujjayi breath. And I was like hearing this all the time. I'm like, what is that, right? It's called ocean breath. And if you listen to yourself deep breathe, it sounds like the ocean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I had this moment one day where I was doing yoga, because, you know, I'm hippy dippy. And I was like, oh, ocean. Like, that's not a mistake. I think God gave us that. Mm. The ocean flows. The ocean just does what it does, right? And so for me, it was this connection moment with God of like, you gave my body the ability to freely flow as well, my soul to do that. Now some people will be like, okay, Crystal, whoa, rein it back in. But that's one of the ways in which I find a lot of peace and calm during this time. I started my yoga practice during COVID. And I get like, while I was in training, I got up at 5 o'clock in the morning to do yoga. I don't ever get up at 5 o'clock in the morning ever. And so that to me is a connection moment. It's also one of the best times for me is, in the early morning before everyone in the house has gotten up, or late in the evening after everyone has gone to bed. There is a stillness that happens. If you have children or other family members living with you, my dogs are just barking. Dogs are in the crate. Everybody's sleeping. And it's a chance to, like, I look at scripture. I read. I sit. I pray. And those things for me are what I feel like connect me to that peace that God gives me. And then getting into nature. I do the craziest thing. I walk to my mailbox in the grass in bare feet. Mm-hmm. Like, well, not when it's like frozen outside, but any other time I do, because I feel like that's like my connection to nature. So those are the things that I feel like work for me as far as finding that peace.
We are like twins, you and I. Like, for real.
I love it.
Of that is true for me. I'll just say ditto. Absolutely, all that.
You know, I connect with a lot of what you were saying, and I have... my daughters have a discipline that they have learned that I shared with them that I found meaningful, but it's the breath prayer. You know, that at times of anxiety or of fear, if they ever have to get a shot, you know, or things like that, they'll say their breath prayer. And it's often for them, it's almost a mantra. One of my daughters does, you know, the hope, peace, joy, and love of Advent. Breathe in God's hope, breathe out God's peace, breathe in God's joy, breathe out God's love. As a way to remind us through our breath, that we are connected to God. And I will do that too. But for me, I think the most powerful way in which I am able to ride out storms, I guess. I can do anything, I think, if I've got a buddy there with me. Mm. If I know I'm not alone, facing something hard and difficult alone, is a scary prospect for me. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly why that is, but just knowing that I'm not alone, I think we can, you know, we can weather anything.
I think another thing too is reminding myself that I'm not in control, and that is okay. And you know what's come to my mind through several of different people talking tonight has been, not my will but your will, God. And I have to say that a lot because I like to have control. So I think when we acknowledge that, like, we can't control the storms, we can't keep the storms from coming, but what we can do is say, God, I'm listening for your voice. And I know that you have me. Daniel, you saying you like to do it with a, you have to have a buddy there. I think of that and like, okay, I know God, you are with me. And I'm going to hold on to that. I'm going to listen. I'm going to say, not my will, but your will. Not my will, but your will. And then hold on tight.
One of the things, one of the many things that our fearless leader, David Cassidy, does well is at the end of our podcasts, he ties the most beautiful bow on the you know, right at the end of the podcast. If you were under any illusion that I was going to do that, I'll disabuse you of that now. But I do want to say that thinking about not only God's presence with us through the storms and difficulties of life, but also those ways in which God comes to us in those still small ways, reminds me of the poet Christina Rossetti. She's an English poet, 19th century, author of perhaps one of my favorite Christmas songs, In the Bleak Midwinter. And she is a marvelous poet, and this is a prayer that that she wrote. Give us grace, O Lord, to work while it is day, fulfilling diligently and patiently whatever duty thou appointest us, doing small things in the day of small things, or great labors, if thou summon us to any, rising and working, sitting still and suffering according to thy word. Go with me, and I will go. But if thou go not with me, send me not. Go before me, if thou put me forth, and let me hear thy voice when I follow. Amen.
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 Thank you all for being on this podcast tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Subscribe to the Faith Element podcast on iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about our Faith Element Bible study curriculum at faithelement.net. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.